13 degrees. This is NHPR.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. The abuse of painkillers in this country has grown so dramatically in recent years that the Centers for Disease Control now calls it a silent epidemic, stealing thousands of lives and tearing apart communities and families across America. Those alarming words accompanied new numbers from the CDC last month, showing that prescription painkiller overdoses now kill more Americans than heroin and cocaine combined. And New Hampshire is far from immune. In fact, the CDC puts the Granite State fifth in the nation for prescription painkiller abuse. But now, with this sobering report, comes a new resolve to combat this issue. A governor's commission met this fall to develop a coordinated response to our painkiller problem. A final strategy will be adopted and released early next year. One recommendation under discussion is that New Hampshire join 48 other states and create a prescription drug monitoring program, an idea that the legislature has resisted in the past. Today in The Exchange, the challenge of painkiller abuse and the current discussion over how to combat it. Let's hear from you. Do you have personal experience with this issue? Maybe someone who was addicted to these drugs, or a doctor, or a pharmacist. Why do you think New Hampshire ranks so high in painkiller abuse? And what steps do you think will be taken to remedy this? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests with us in studio. Dr. Seddon Savage, director of the Dartmouth Center on Addiction Recovery and Education, adjunct faculty at Dartmouth Medical School, president of the American Pain Society, and chair of the New Hampshire Medical Society Task Force on Pain and Prescription Drug Abuse. And Dr. Savage, it's good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura. It's a pleasure to be here.
Also with us, Karen Eckel, Assistant Attorney General at the Criminal Justice Bureau of the New Hampshire Attorney General's Office. And Karen, welcome to you, too.
Good morning, Laura. Thank you so much for having me.
And also with us, Rick Newman, lobbyist for the New Hampshire Independent Pharmacy Association, which represents almost 30 independent pharmacies in the state. And Rick Newman, welcome back to you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, all of you, but you, Dr. Savage, first, why is New Hampshire so high up in this ranking of painkiller abuse?
Laura, the problem of prescription drug abuse is a very, very challenging one. I think there's no simple reason for the challenge. If there were, we'd have simple solutions. I think there are multiple different things that contribute to the problem, and I think that we need comprehensive and comprehensive solutions to the problem. New Hampshire is marks high, in fact, in healthcare by many, many different quality markers. Pain treatment is part of that, and opioids are part of pain treatment. So we know, what we know from all the data that's available is that when opioids are more available for therapeutic use, they're more available for misuse. What we need to do is tighten the pipeline through which we move these medications so that they can be used appropriately for the treatment of pain, and yet we can not see their availability and diversion for misuse as much.
And well, there are many forms
of misuse.
An opiate is what?
I'm sorry. Opioid medications are those powerful pain medications such as morphine, methadone, oxycodone. And they're very ancient medications. It's sometimes helpful to get a perspective that this is not a new problem. Opioids have been used for millennia, since for about 5,000 years. And throughout history, we've seen this over and over. As people adopt opioids for the treatment of pain, cough, intestinal disorders, they treat many, many things. And they are, to this day, the most effective medications we have available for pain. But when we have embraced them throughout history, often the next generation, seeing some of the consequences of misuse and deaths, overdoses, addiction, have move back and reduce the use of opioids for pain treatment or for therapeutic purposes in medicine. I hope, and I think it's a hope, it's not a certainty, that we're at a point in history now where the science of pain, the science of addiction and reward, the science of opioid pharmacology, coupled with new communications technologies that allow us to rapidly distribute information about strategies to reduce the problem, data on the problem, communication about therapeutic issues such as a prescription monitoring program. These communication technologies and our understanding of the science that informs therapeutic use of opioids and misuse of opioids, we can find, after all these millennia, the balance to use these appropriately and not have some of the tragic consequences that we're seeing at this time.
And I want to ask you a little bit later, Dr. Savage, about the addictive qualities of these medications and so forth. But Karen, to bring you into this too, I mean, Dr. Savage is right. New Hampshire's a healthy state. It's a wealthy state. On the face of it, we shouldn't seem to have this problem, but here we are, way up there in terms of prescription painkiller abuse. And I wonder what your thoughts are on why.
Well, I think that it has to do with probably two things, availability of the drug and a perception that there is low risk involved in using the drug. Certainly, from a law enforcement perspective, this diversion of prescription drugs is the fastest growing drug problem in our state. We have been aware of it for at least 4 years in law enforcement. And of course, the concern and challenge is that these drugs are being diverted into these non-medical uses and illicit channels in a variety of ways. Many of those ways are dangerous and deceptive. They include theft, robbery, fraud, and that can include prescription forgeries and doctor shoppers.
So there's a criminal aspect to this.
Absolutely. There's also the illegal importation of these painkillers that are coming from other states and also through the internet. So they are coming into the state in a variety of different ways, and each one of those methods really requires a different approach.
Well, and the question, though, in my mind is, I mean, the CDC, again, said this is a big national problem. It's been going on for a while, all prescription drugs, but especially painkillers. And I hear you, Karen, on that these drugs are coming into this state. But I keep getting back to this question about why New Hampshire? I mean, again, here we are, and on many indicators, we're okay. So is there something about us that makes us want to abuse these drugs?
Well, I don't know that I can answer that. Why should New Hampshire be any different from any other state in the country? It is a national problem. It's a public health problem, although law enforcement is an important partner in this, in solving and looking for strategies to address it, because persons who become addicted to drugs left unchecked, we know those individuals often end up in the criminal justice system. So it does become our problem as well.
A problem with wide-ranging consequences for sure. Law enforcement, the economy, overall health. And Rick Newman, I want to bring you into this too, again, with the New Hampshire Independent Pharmacists Association. What are pharmacists saying about this? Surely they've got a role here.
Well, independent pharmacists are just that. My organization are folks who work behind the bench. They fill prescriptions themselves. They're small business men and women who are trying to make a living in a tough economy. And when prescription drug monitoring program legislation has been introduced in the past, virtually all of the burden for collecting the data has been in those proposals was put on pharmacists. So the cost was there were provisions in it to provide the cost. There were provisions, there were criminal penalties in there if pharmacists didn't do things correctly. And, you know, Karen mentioned doctor shopping, and that's the issue we hear about a lot, doctor shopping, where people go from one physician to another to try to obtain more than one prescription for the same painkiller. Well, you know, our solution to that is we've certainly recognized that problem. But if you're trying to stop doctor shopping, then have the physicians enter into some sort of monitoring program so that when a physician writes a prescription, they could check to see if someone has obtained the exact same prescription from the physician down the hall. Put the burden where the problem is. You know, it really is a business issue from the perspective of the independent pharmacist. But also, in terms of really doing something about this problem, the plans that have been put forth have never been a real-time plan. So, in other words, when you if this program were in place, the plans have always included the data would be collected and reviewed 30 days behind or even longer. So you're not stopping anybody at the point of sale of getting that drug that you're trying to stop them from getting. And so, therefore, you lead to the suspicion that for the exactly why is the Criminal Bureau of the Attorney General's office here, that this legislation is more about criminal than it is about trying to stop somebody from getting that prescription.
Can we just back up a little bit? Because you're talking about the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, and I mentioned it in my introduction. But, Rick, can you just give us a real quick layperson definition of the legislation that you're talking about and these programs in the 48 other states? So these are up and running in 48 other states. The
Correct.
Suggestion has been made, hey, New Hampshire, let's go there. So that's the legislation. Just give us a quick definition of sort of how these things work.
Well, what would happen in all the proposals that I've seen over the years is that when a person comes into a pharmacy, the pharmacist would be given the burden and the responsibility of collecting a number of data. And there, the last one I saw, there were about 12, you know, your name, address, the drug number, the prescribing physician, all of these things are collected by the pharmacist and then reported to some central database that would be held somewhere in the state by a state government agency. That database would be available to law enforcement. It would be available to other physicians, and it would be other medical professionals. And it's been outlined, various different people have access to that database. That is where, and if that's not done correctly, or if the pharmacist doesn't do it timely, there were penalties involved. There were also costs put on the pharmacist to fund the program because there's no money to pay for it. And so that, in a nutshell, is what I've seen in terms of the model of what a prescription drug monitoring program would look like.
All right. Well, maybe after the break, we'll dig into that a little bit more with some folks who have experience with this issue. And I'll ask you folks also what you think about the prescription drug monitoring program. Also talking about the addictive qualities of these drugs, how they affect the body. Dr. Savage, I want more from you on that. We will take your calls, too. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange at nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477.
Good morning. It's 9:19, and support for NHPR comes from UR members and from New Hampshire Orthopedic Center, located in Nashua, Manchester, Londonderry, Amherst, Salem, and on the web at nhoc.com. And from All Wireless, New Hampshire's Sprint-certified business dealer, offering Sprint wireless solutions to New Hampshire small and mid-sized businesses for more than a decade. 866-856-CELL. More on problems with painkillers in New Hampshire on the exchange on NHPR at 10 o'clock. It's the Diane Rehm Show. New Hampshire weather today, partly cloudy with highs near 30 in the North Country, 35 to 40 in central and southern areas of the state. Tonight, partly cloudy in the evening, clearing in the overnight, lows tonight near 15 in the North Country, 15 to 20 across western and central areas of the state, 25 to 30 degrees across southern New Hampshire. Mostly sunny, breezy tomorrow, highs from 30 north ranging to 40 in southern New Hampshire. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at new numbers showing New Hampshire near the top in terms of painkiller abuse in this country. We're exploring why, what might be done about it, and we invite you to join us. 1-800-892-6477. Why do you think New Hampshire ranks so high in painkiller abuse? What steps do you think could be taken to remedy this? We especially want to hear from you if you have personal experience from this issue, either from the point of view of a person who was addicted or a medical professional or a pharmacist or law enforcement. 1-800-892-6477 is our number, 1-800-892-NHPR. I want to bring another perspective into this now. We're talking to Dr. David Heller. He's an emergency room physician for 23 years. He's currently at the Portsmouth Regional Hospital. And Dr. Heller, I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Laura.
Well, what are you seeing?
Nice to be here.
Yeah, what are you seeing on the seacoast in terms of painkiller abuse on a daily basis, Dr. Heller? Just kind of bring us into the ER with you and tell us what you see.
Well, it's there on a very much so on a daily basis. As a matter of fact, I don't think I've worked a shift in the emergency room in the last 5 years where I haven't had some sort of problem with the abuse or the attempted abuse of opiates. And so it's a very, very big problem. And at first, I thought it was just unique to the Seacoast. But in talking with my colleagues in emergency rooms all over the state, it's really in every emergency room in New Hampshire.
And when you say it, how is it manifesting itself? People coming in, you know, super sick because they overdosed, or people coming in begging for pain medications, or how does it take shape?
All of the above. We have people who come in with overdoses on a regular basis. We have people who come in asking for help to detox, to get off of the medicines that they've been abusing for a period of time. And then we have people coming in every day with an assortment of pain syndromes, attempting to get pain medications.
And how do you discern sort of who's really in need, Dr. Heller, and who may be doing this illicitly?
Well, it's very difficult because these people, some of these people are very good at being able to present themselves with pain that sometimes is difficult to know. Is this real, or is this something that's a charade just attempting to get medicines? And it makes it very difficult for physicians, especially emergency physicians who may never have had an encounter with this patient, to know what's legitimate and what isn't. And what happens is that every emergency room physician at some point has been duped by some clever person. And so sometimes when somebody has legitimate pain that needs to be treated legitimately, it's been shown in studies that we tend to undertreat that pain, which is a shame. On the other hand, and that's because we've been duped, and that's because it's very difficult. There's always some doubt in our mind when somebody comes in with pain. Is this real, or am I being duped again?
Wow.
And, you know, programs such as a prescription monitoring program that's been done in every other state but I think three would be very helpful at doing this.
How does that help you make those difficult choices?
Well, in Portsmouth, we're 5 minutes from Maine, and we're 15 minutes from Massachusetts, and both of those states have prescription monitoring programs, and people from both of those states tend to come into our area knowing that there's not a prescription monitoring program, and they can go to our emergency room or to a local physician and get opioid painkiller medications, and then proceed down the road a few miles and do the whole thing all over again and get some more. Some of these people do it because they're addicted and they need to continue to have a supply for themselves. And some people do it because it's their full-time job. This is how they make a living. They sell drugs. And these drugs are being sold in the high schools and in the middle schools and in people who have graduated school a long time ago. This is hitting all age groups. I mean, I've seen this in elementary school kids.
No
that
kidding.
Are into opioid pain medicine. Yeah, it's unbelievable. And it's really epidemic. And it's epidemic, but yet it's under almost everybody's radar screen. People don't realize it, and I'm very glad that programs like this are bringing it to people's attention.
Well, Dr. Heller, you used the word epidemic, and certainly the CDC last month used the exact same words. Why now? Why are we seeing this now?
Well, I think it's unclear. I think part of it is because the supply is high. It's very easy to get. The economics of things make it very cheap and inexpensive to get. And I think that the world today is a lot more dangerous and more complicated of a world than it may have been a number of years ago. And I think that one way to deal with the complexities of the world is to try to escape from it. And so that's why I think that a lot of people turn to drugs to escape from problems that may be going on in their world.
What about the doctors, Dr. Heller? You know, you talked about the prescription drug monitoring program, and we'll talk more about that in the studio. We've already touched on it. What role do doctors like yourself play, though, in this?
Well, most of the emergency physicians that I have talked to are very highly in favor of this program. We want to be able to query a database to know does this person have legitimate pain problem or not? And you can discern this pretty easily. And I've done this because I have access to the main prescription database. If you have a person who comes in and they say, you know, I have chronic pain of some sort, and you query the database and you find that this person indeed has been seeing a pain specialist or some other specialist for their problems, that they're getting medicine on a regular basis from one provider that's closely monitoring them, that they're getting it at proper intervals, then that's a legitimate use of pain medicine. If you have somebody who got 20 Percocets from an ER yesterday, and now they're here at your emergency room, and then 2 weeks before that they were at another emergency room or another doctor's office, that's a doctor shopper. And so this monitoring program really separates, to a certain extent, the doctor shoppers from people who have legitimate need for pain medicine.
Well, Dr. Hell, it's been good to talk to you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
That's Dr. David Heller, again, an ER physician for 23 years, currently at the Portsmouth Regional Hospital. Our number for you to join us here on The Exchange is 1-800-892-6477. The email exchange at nhpr.org. And all of you, before we go to the phones, I did want to ask you a couple quick questions. And Dr. Savage, to you, I have an email that came in while Dr. Heller was talking, and this person, Mary, seems to feel that the problem is, in her words, pain control and physicians writing huge prescriptions and letting these things out. Mary says, I had neck surgery a year ago, left the hospital with 90 pills of oxycodone. She says she needed about 5. Later, she was given Flexeril, a muscle relaxant. I took one and realized I couldn't function if I continued to take it. A few years ago, Mary says she had a kidney stone, which appeared to have passed in the ER. They sent me home with 90 tablets of oxycodone. I probably needed 3. Again, what about the doctors? I was getting at this with Dr. Heller, too. Are you folks over-prescribing this? Just here, take it. Hope you feel better. Goodbye.
Well, I was struck in listening to Dr. Heller speaking about the ER and in Mary's question about having her acute pain treated, that there's so many different contexts in which we treat pain, and the appropriate approach varies highly depending upon what your context is. In the ER, Dr. Heller very articulately explained some of the challenges. In primary care, following patients over time, one has the opportunity to understand the risks, the co-occurring medical and psychiatric or substance problems patients may have, to monitor patients over time and to adapt the care of the individual. Same thing in the pain clinic. It evolves over time. You monitor patients very carefully. In acute pain interactions, such as post-surgical interactions, often the surgeon sees an individual once, twice, maybe one follow-up visit, and they want to be sure that the patient is covered for their pain. And there's been a recent discussion about appropriate practice in the post-surgical setting, whether in fact this erring on the side of pain relief has resulted in too many medications remaining in people's medicine cabinets, or people taking them because these are somewhat seductive medications, you feel good on them, not only is your pain relief, some people will feel a little lift for them, and so they may seduce people into taking them longer than they actually need them if they have a more abundant supply than they might need for their acute pain.
So Mary has a point. Some doctors do give way too many of these pills.
Well, yes. And this, our society has put a high priority on pain control. You know, our accreditation and quality assurance groups have made pain management a very high priority. Patients expect good pain control. And I think in the past, before we were fully aware of these challenges and how much of this opioid medications were getting out into the cycles of misuse, we have tended to err on the side of providing pain relief. And I think we need to rethink that, give people smaller quantities in acute situations, have them call back if they're continuing to need pain, and then reevaluate them. Part of good pain management, especially when we're using opioids, is intermittent, quite frequent reevaluation of the pain to be sure that we're adequately addressing their needs, but to be sure that they're not developing a problem that could result in really negative consequences for the individual.
And Rick, we heard from Dr. Heller saying, boy, especially there on the seacoast, so close to Massachusetts and Maine, he would really be helped by a prescription monitoring program. First of all, what do you think about that?
I don't doubt that he would. The the question for a business people, whenever any of these programs are discussed, is, you know, who pays the price? Who is given the responsibility? You know, I certainly can't sit here as anyone with any kind of intelligence and say and disagree that there's a problem with people abusing prescription drugs in this country. Of course there is. The question becomes, whose burden is that? Well, if it's a burden for society, then it should be a burden for all of society. And we can't pass laws to put the burden on small business people because they happen to be one part of that pipeline that the doctor spoke about. The beginning of that pipeline starts with the physician. And, you know, some, who's going to pay the cost? There always is the devil in the details. It can be a wonderful idea. But I will reiterate, too, that for that physician in Portsmouth, if it isn't a real-time program, it doesn't do much good, you know, in the immediate of stopping someone.
If it doesn't stop it right there.
Right, you've got to stop it at the source. So these programs that have been designed in the past have not been real-time, and we certainly have the technology to do that. It's a question of who's going to pay for that.
Well, and Karen, there was a big summit earlier in the fall, in October, on this issue of prescription painkiller abuse and whether one of the issues that came up is whether New Hampshire should adopt this prescription drug monitoring program. What do you think, Karen, about what Rick Newman says? Look, if this is a societal problem, society should pay for it. Don't just pick on the pharmacists. They're just one part of this complicated tangle.
Well, it is true that that this problem is very complex and does put a part of the solution on all of us in some way. For law enforcement, we support the idea of a prescription drug monitoring program because really the purpose behind it is to support lawful access to prescription drugs. And it's not a problem that's going to go away. Prescription drugs are here to stay. Addiction is part of the problem of prescription drugs. Addiction leads to crime. We're all feeling the effects of the problem. So to the extent that it does provide a medical tool to the dispensers, who are ultimately the gatekeepers, they are the ones who are prescribing the drugs there, controlling how much of the drug is being placed into the communities.
I'm just wondering, though, if there's another way to look at it. I mean, you know, you called the pharmacists the gatekeepers, but there's other people behind that gate that are contributing. So could this, if you really want the monitoring program, could this become just part of the AG's budget instead of, again, making it all about the pharmacists?
Well, I think that first of all, the funding question. There are federal funding sources that are available to states to implement their programs, and even the next step to keep them sort of established for the first year or two. Beyond that, states are doing different things. One idea is to provide a fee to prescribers in the state.
To the doctors.
Because if it's a medical tool, it is being used by them, they are carrying some of the cost. That seems to make sense. So that is one way that a prescription drug monitoring program can be funded.
I want to bring another voice into our conversation. This is State Representative Neil Kirk, a Republican from Ware. He's also been looking at this issue of a prescription drug monitoring program. And Representative Kirk, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
Nice to be on the show, Laura.
Well, why do you think, Representative Kirk, that New Hampshire is one of only two states without a prescription drug monitoring program?
I have four thoughts on that.
Let's hear them.
The first one is that there is no evidence by means of a controlled study that proves prescription drug monitoring programs work. Dr. Pelosi of the CDC reported to the National Council of State, a conference of state legislatures in 2009 on this issue, and his conclusion was I thought, very important. He said, no evidence that as a group, prescription drug monitoring programs reduce overdose morbidity or mortality. So why are we going to put in a program which may make intuitive sense, but does not have any evidence base that it actually works? It seems to me that there are perhaps 10 or 15 different approaches to this problem that states take, and this is one of the ones that, for which there's no evidence. Drug courts, for example, are much more effective with evidence that they actually work than a prescription drug monitoring program in eliminating or reducing morbidity and mortality. Secondly, there's a real question, especially with today's legislature in New Hampshire, as to whether or not this issue of abuse is an individual problem and an individual responsibility, or it's the responsibility of the state. Now, that's a philosophical question that I don't know that we're going to agree on, but the issue is there. Thirdly, there are privacy issues involved in creating a centralized database where all of your Schedule II and Schedule III drug prescriptions are going to be recorded, not just the ones that deal specifically with the kinds of drugs that create mortality. The purpose of this database, ostensibly, is to allow doctors to have access to it so that, as one of your guests said, in real time they can determine not to have a prescription, not to write a prescription. But the legislation consistently has not required doctors to use this. The latest version says they're encouraged to use it, which doesn't make much sense. Doctors have a problem with this particular kind of solution to this problem. And the privacy issue, of course, has to do with the reversal of presumption of innocence. Most of us believe that we're innocent until proven guilty, and in effect, collecting information on our drug prescribing habits forces us, in effect, to testify against ourselves, which many of us find a problem. And that has nothing to do with the hacking that inevitably will occur if somebody finds some value in this particular database. We don't allow roadside cameras in this state taking pictures of all sorts of vehicles driving down the highway innocently in order to catch the few speeders or whomever else may be out there for whom a warrant is outstanding, because we understand that this is a violation of privacy. And in New Hampshire, we really value that.
And Representative Kirk, hold on the line if you could. I got one more question for you, but we have to go to a short break. So stay on the line if you could, please. And we'll take your calls after that break, too. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477.
On a tiny Pacific island, a quiet celebration of light brings new hope to a group of desperate men.
And a troubled young woman suffers a tragic loss, yet also finds her way to a new and rewarding life. I'm Murray Horwitz.
And I'm Susan Stamberg. Hear those stories and more this year on Hanukkah Lights from NPR.
Friday at noon on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Toyota Volvo of Keene, member of the Fenton Family Dealerships, providing Toyota quality and Volvo safety from caring people, Route 12, Keene, New Hampshire, and at toyotakeene.com. And the Common Man family celebrating New Year's Eve with dining, dancing, and overnight accommodations at their inns in Plymouth and Claremont. Details at theseamaninn.com. Good morning, it's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today we're looking at new numbers putting the Granite State near the top in terms of painkiller abuse. We're looking at this problem, possible solutions. We invite you to join us at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange at nhpr.org. Just before the break, we were talking about the possibility of a prescription drug monitoring program with Neil Kirk, longtime Republican state representative from Ware. And Representative Kirk, just before the break, you outlined your problems with this. You said there's no evidence that it works, that there's a fundamental philosophical question about whether painkiller abuse is an individual problem or a problem of the state. You also talked about privacy issues. Just to wrap up with you then, if not this prescription drug monitoring program, which, as you know, the Attorney General's office wants, our doctor here in the studio who works a lot on this issue wants, if not this, What do you think it'll take to make New Hampshire, you know, move down this list in terms of prescription painkiller abuse?
I wish I knew, Laura, but this is an area where we have a whole variety of expertise that doesn't reside in the legislature. And the particular program that they have been suggesting we adopt just doesn't make sense for New Hampshire. Let me give you two illustrations of that. First of all, anybody who's going down the interstate, stopping at various hospitals, will be sophisticated enough to circumvent the system by using false identification. You can get over the internet various kinds of driver's licenses, so that there won't be information about that available. Secondly, many of these drugs are available over the internet, with or without prescriptions. We all know, you can get Viagra over the internet, and many of these other drugs are also available that way. Thirdly, they don't cover designer drugs or methamphetamines and things of this nature. So there are just so many loopholes to this that one has to wonder, why are we really proposing it? And I think if you look at the source of funding, Laura, you'll see that it's coming through the Department of Justice. In this case, law enforcement is riding on the back or dragging on the skirts of the medical community, because it's law enforcement who wants easy access to this information. They can get it now individually by going to the various drug stores, but they want it centralized so that they can enforce the laws more efficiently. So you have to ask whether this is being driven by medical or by legal motives.
All right. Well, Representative Kirk, we'll wrap up with you, but I have a feeling once the new session opens, we'll be talking to you again about this. So thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Take care. That's Neil Kirk, longtime Republican state representative from Ware. Again, our number is 1-800-892-6477. And Dr. Savage, Karen Eckel, Rick Newman, let's go right back to our callers who've been waiting. And Peter's waiting in Dover. Hi, Peter. You're on the air. Go ahead. Thanks for hanging on.
You're more than welcome, Laura. This is a very important topic. I'm a colleague of Representative Kirk's. He's a well-known privacy advocate and a well-known opponent of prescription monitoring programs or lots of government activities. As a libertarian member of the legislature, he opposes government involvement wherever he thinks it could be obtrusive.
What about you, Peter? How do you feel about this issue?
I am a strong supporter of a prescription monitoring program, and I serve on the subcommittee which examined House Bill 332, which would have instituted a prescription drug monitoring program in New Hampshire. And there are several aspects that need to be absolutely understood by the public. And that is that the most serious drug problem that New Hampshire has is not heroin or cocaine or any of these other illegal drugs, but rather prescription drug diversion. I've spoken with the president and the past president of the New Hampshire Police Chiefs Association, and they are very strongly in favor of this prescription monitoring program, not because they want to get into everybody's business, but because they recognize that the diversion of prescription drugs is causing tremendous problems.
Well, if we could talk about that a little bit, this diversion, and this is up your alley, Karen Eckel. From a law enforcement perspective, you probably like the idea that, you know, you can figure out who might be abusing the system, and Peter seems on board with that. But, you know, Neil Kirk said, hey, people who are going to doctor shop are pretty sophisticated, and they'll find ways to get around this monitoring program. I wonder what you think.
Some people will, absolutely. There are people who will figure out what the law is and find a way to go around it. But there are also there are also people that would, I think, be identified with a prescription drug monitoring program. And once they're identified, choices can be made about what to do about it. And that would be a clinician's decision, whether they would want to refer that person to treatment or have some other option to provide. But the main thing is that those folks would not fall through the cracks and end up in a law enforcement setting. When they do, we do know that there is a very good response from placing these folks into drug courts because they are not your typical drug criminal.
And I wonder, Karen, when we look at this issue, do we approach it, in your opinion, with the right balance of law enforcement and treatment? I mean, some folks, yes, they're trying to get as many pills as possible. And I think, Dr. Savage, you said earlier, it's their job. They sell these things. But, you know, other people are just addicted. And law enforcement versus treatment, are we striking the right balance? Maybe, Dr. Savage, you look like you want to answer that question.
Well, absolutely. First, I wanted to say that the medical community is really strongly behind an appropriate prescription monitoring program. And the devil's always in the details, and there are things we'd like to see to make it more friendly to the citizens of New Hampshire so that from our point of view as a clinical tool, it'll allow us to make more inform clinical decisions about treating pain and identifying people who may have problems with opioid misuse or with addiction and refer them to the appropriate treatment for that. But another benefit of the prescription monitoring program is that it will give us, once we have a national network of programs, we'll be able to really understand the challenges at hand much better by the development of data. De-identified, not specific patient data. I don't want to invoke the privacy concerns that Representative Kirk brought up. On the privacy issue, this information is already available to all of us who work in law enforcement or in medicine by virtue of the fact that these are controlled substances. We have access to the data that would be kept by a prescription monitoring program, so there's no new personal information that would be out there. It's just challenging to bring it together. So it would the prescription monitoring program would make it easier for healthcare clinicians to gather the information, easier for law enforcement when they needed the information on a case to gather the information. But it doesn't.
So it's there already.
It's there already.
I was kind of curious about that because, you know, when I go to the doctor, the first thing they do is tap in, they bring up my file. So it's there in their electronic records. Mm-hmm. So if I were up in the North Country vacationing and I had an accident and had to go to the hospital in North Conway, would those doctors be able to access the same information that my doctors at Concord Hospital can?
Well, they would have to call all the hospitals that they thought you might have visited. They would have to call all the pharmacies in the state to see where prescriptions had been filled.
Okay, that's complicated.
It's very complicated and time-consuming and not possible, not realistic.
So. Okay, Rick, I can see you want to jump in.
Well, it is complicated, and you know what? The Constitution wants things like that to be complicated. Representative Kirk makes the point. I don't disagree that if I go to my pharmacy, the pharmacy has records of the prescriptions that I receive, but it is not in a central database controlled by the government that law enforcement or anyone else in the government that's identified as being allowed to do it can have access to readily. I mean, I think that is a very important privacy concern. The bottom line for our independent pharmacies is all the things that Representative Kirk talked about. Basically, his point was, any kind of drug monitoring program has loopholes in it that are big enough to drive a truck through. And given that, and given the sophistication of people that I think, unfortunately, we've probably all interacted with people who have drug abuse problems in our lifetimes at one time or another, these folks are not stupid, and they're going to know that if they go in and do their normal doctor shopping, they'll get caught. So they'll figure out a way around it. And as a result, so the results will be very minimal, but the burden on independent pharmacies will be huge. And it isn't pharmacies that are the gatekeeper or control the supply of these drugs. It's physicians. You cannot get a prescription drug from a pharmacy without a prescription. So, you know, in the legislature, in my experience there, there's a term that's oftentimes used as feel-good legislation. It probably applies, you know, euphemistically as well as realistically to this issue as well, because it is feel-good legislation. You go home and think you did something, but you didn't really do much of anything.
Let's go back to our callers. Lots of people who want to join us. From North Conway is Anne. Hi, Anne. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to bring up the idea of the human and financial impact of this sort of doctor shopping for opiates. And I wonder if there are any studies available on how often these people are paying their copays in the ED, and who's actually paying for these doctor shopping visits. Because of EMTALA, the doctors have to see them if they're complaining of pain, and if they're going from one place to another, they're taking up an emergency room bed when you know, there might be someone out there who's got an actual acute problem that does need to be seen and that does affect the timely delivery of care. And ultimately, if they're not paying their co-pays, then the citizens of the state of New Hampshire are paying for it in our increased insurance premiums and in our taxes if they are on Medicaid. So I just kind of wanted to bring that idea up and put it out there for discussion in the context of opiate abuse.
So it kind of affects all of us, you're saying, because it jacks up the costs. And is that what you're saying, Anne?
Correct. It does. You know, I do work in healthcare. I am an RN, and it's not a secret that this type of thing is rampant and it goes on everywhere, not just in New Hampshire, but in every state.
Right. Well, thanks a lot for calling in. And, you know, Dr. Savage, this was an issue that came up when there was a study done of Medicare patients and how some of them are abusing these drugs, some because they had a horrible accident and they got addicted to the painkillers, but some were using Medicare as a way to, you know, Medicare Part D, to get these drugs and then sell them.
Absolutely. And that's yet another negative impact of the problem, that the financial cost to society, both in terms of health care and probably loss of productivity and activity on the part of the people who are afflicted with some of the issues. It's interesting. It brings to mind the flip side of this, though, which is that the Institute of Medicine in June released a report on the challenge of undertreated pain affecting 116 million Americans after their data review, and with a societal impact of around $600 billion a year in terms of health care costs just for treating pain and for loss of productivity. So once again, we have this challenge of finding the balance between the two problems.
Wow. I mean, given what we've talked about this hour, it seems amazing that there's untreated pain, given the flood of painkillers.
But opioids are not always the most effective treatment of pain for many people. And we have many, many other modalities that are often underutilized for a variety of reasons.
So more training for doctors and nurses and so forth on other
modalities, and more support for time spent with patients and really comprehensively treating patients with complex chronic illness.
Instead of running in and out of the waiting room or running in and out of the treatment room for 15 minutes because you've got 30 patients back.
Exactly.
Let's take one more if we could. This is Richard in Westmoreland. Hi, Richard. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. Very interesting show. I'm an emergency physician. I deal with this issue almost every day. And show a little bit depressing. We got a big public health epidemic. We don't know why it's happening in our state. I'm hearing from the pharmacist that they don't want the burden of dealing with the problem. I'm hearing from the legislature that there are four or five reasons not to pass this prescription monitoring system law. And I work in Vermont, and all I can tell you is using the Vermont Prescription Monitoring Service, I've been able to avoid overprescribing, avoid diversion, and actually at times make a diagnosis of addiction and get a patient into treatment. Currently, prescriptions that are written in Vermont and Maine are coming into New Hampshire to be filled to avoid scrutiny. And I would not care if we took this out of the law enforcement issue. Law enforcement can use subpoenas to get medical records if they need it. And let's deal with it as a medical issue, but give us a tool that we need.
Well, you said you were an ER physician, Richard, so it's good to hear from you. When you say, I see this every day, I deal with it every day, in what way are you dealing with it every day?
Well, just what the other physician said. We see people that are coming in with pain. We can't find an organic reason that they have the pain. Patients are sometimes demanding. Yeah, it's quite a problem. We're being told at the same time that we undertreat pain and overtreat pain.
Just as you said, Dr. Savage. Richard, it's good to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, and we could talk for hours and hours, I think, on this. But just to close out, as you all know, there's a governor's commission that is going to have a recommendation due to release a plan early next year. What do you want it to say, Rick, when it comes to combating prescription drug abuse?
Well, I'd like us to try to find a way to do it that addresses some of these issues. And I know it may sound parochial, but that's my role here. I mean, it should come up with a solution that does not identify, you know, one group in the pipeline, as the doctor said, and say all of the burden is going to be on you, all of the cost is going to be on you. Karen mentioned that there's money that comes from the feds to implement. Well, they do. They'll give you money to start. Then, like always, they go away. And 5 years from now or 3 years from now, when New Hampshire's looking for money to pay for it, you know, that report should include a comprehensive way. How are you going to pay for it? And it should be, you know, done in a way that makes sense and not that says, well, because you happen to be a small businessman that sell or woman that sells prescription drugs, we're going to have you pay to solve this societal problem.
And real quick, Dr. Savage, I know this is something you could talk on and on about, but what do you hope, what sort of the, is the tone that you hope this report takes?
Well, I anticipate that it will be a very comprehensive plan, that it will have roles for all of us, for prescribers, for pharmacists, for law enforcement and justice. And just to say that the Medical Society is also about to launch an online tool that will be a resource for all prescribers in the state, and we hope we're doing our part to move this forward.
Okay. Well, Dr. Savage, thank you for taking the time to come in. I appreciate
My pleasure. Thank you, Laura, for bringing us together.
Dr. Seddon Savage, she wears many hats on this issue, including chair of the New Hampshire Medical Society Task Force on Pain and Prescription Drug Abuse. She's also director of the Dartmouth Center on Addiction Recovery and Education. Karen Eckel, it was good to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Karen Eckel, she's an assistant attorney general at the Criminal Justice Bureau. And Rick Newman, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you very much.
Rick Newman, lobbyist for the New Hampshire Independent Pharmacy Association. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.